I think a lot of the founders don't know what they're getting into, and they're just trying to make the price go up, and they make a whole bunch of promises they can't keep with ideas that are half-baked or quarter-baked, and they just get lambasted for it. I'm personally not buying any NFT project for the utility. They had no idea what they were doing. They got into NFTs in 2021, 2022 to make some money because they saw everyone else doing it. And now they're stuck with this community of 10,000 or more. Some of these have 30,000 plus NFTs in them with holders they need to make happy. And I don't want any part of that.
If you are an Empire listener, hopefully you've played around on chain. And if you have done that, you know that transferring assets across different chains is a pain, to put it nicely. That is why we are incredibly excited to have the Wormhole Foundation as a partner of the Empire podcast, stewards of the Wormhole protocol, supporting over 30 different blockchains and 6 different runtimes. Stay tuned later in the show. We have a cool thing that you can claim, which is a Wormhole NFT just for Empire listeners. This episode is brought to you by Monad, which has not only the highest performance EVM L1 architecture ever built, but also the wildest and craziest community in crypto. Monad's internal devnet is live and public testnet comes out soon. So make sure you join the Monad community today at discord.gg/Monad, M-O-N-A-D, Monad. This episode is brought to you by Shardium, an EVM-based smart contract platform with state sharding and auto-scaling. Shardium is designed to achieve horizontal scaling to ensure sustainably low transaction fees for you, the end user. You'll learn more about Shardium and auto-scaling later in the show. This episode is brought to you by Supra, an Oracle provider across more than 50 different blockchains. If you are building anything in crypto, you likely need verifiable randomness and you need oracles. Well, for Empire listeners, Supra is now offering a limited deal. It is 12 months of Supra free for any Empire listener. You can go to supra.com, that's supra.com/blockworks. Limited time only. Go check it out. Thanks, Supra, for sponsoring Empire. All right, everybody. We got some new faces to Empire. Santi's on the road, so he can't join us. We have three guests today. We have Jeebs, principal at a large crypto asset manager. We've got Tyler D, NFT lead at Lucky Trader. I think probably one of the smartest folks in the NFT world right now. And then we've got Deez, I honestly don't know what to call you except for a professional shit coiner and NFT extraordinaire, my friend. So, I mean that in the best way. So yeah, Jeebs, Deez, Tyler, welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Very excited.
Let's do it. So, basically this, I wanted to have the three of you on because you three are in my mind, the three smartest people in the NFT world. And I had this bet a while ago that I've expressed many times on Empire, which is, if you believe an asset is going up or you are exposed to an ecosystem and you think that ecosystem is going to do well in the cycle, NFTs are the best way to get exposure to that. And so far, I've been proven slightly right, but there is a much better trade that has been put on, which is meme coins, right? So if you are long Solana, Mad Lads did decently well, and maybe they were a nice levered bet, but actually buying Whiff was much better than that. And sure, maybe Pudgies, or you know, same thing with Bonk, right? And you know, Avalanche, same thing. Like, yeah, maybe you thought Avalanche was going up. Sure, there's some NFTs that did even better than Avalanche or AVAX, but actually, like, Tech and COQ did much, much better than any of those. So, Jeebs, I would love to actually just kind of pass this to you. Like, can you just share with me, like, how you are feeling about NFTs in general and in the light of almost meme coins taking attention away, and also in the light of, like, how you contextualize that compared to the last cycle? Very broad, open-ended question here.
Yeah, and it feels like a great place to start too. I mean, if you just like look back at the 2021-2022 NFT bull cycle, like I think if anyone remembers that time, things got just really out of hand. And it was like anyone would launch any small project, instant sellout, you'd go onto OpenSea, instant run-up in price. And this was kind of like pre-Blur days. And so floors would just escalate really quickly and then they'd come down pretty sharply. And it was all an attention game. And it reminds me, like you're saying, so much right now of what we're seeing within sort of like the meme coin land and what's going on with Solana. But back then, you know, it was gas prices were incredibly high. Projects would, like I said, sell out really quickly, just zoom right up. And so it was purely an attention game. And it feels like almost the same exact thing is playing out right now on Solana with meme coins. but it's just speed running it. There's almost zero transaction fee. You look at tokens like today, we're looking at Boehm over the past day and a half. I mean, it's been absolutely unreal. And during that period with NFTs, I felt like you would see the same thing happen over and over again, where project runs up and then it's just like cascading down. But there would be multiple of them a day. And then you go to Deck Screener today and you see the same exact thing playing out over and over again. So it just feels like almost a speedrun version of it now. And all attention seems to be specifically in that Solana meme coin ecosystem. And ETH NFT is like, even though the narrative isn't there right now, you know, if you look at some of the data from last fall, we pretty much bottomed out in like the October timeframe. And since then, it has been like a pretty steady come up. But when you comp it against the meme coins, it's just not even close.
Deez, what is your... I feel like you sent this tweet, I'm pretty sure this was you, that you said you were maybe late to meme coins or you'd been ignoring them a little bit. And now, based on your my timeline and seeing you tweet, it feels like you're all in. So how are you thinking about this, most recent couple weeks, like NFTs relative to meme coins and just what you're paying attention to?
Yeah, from a financial perspective, I'm definitely not all in. From an attention perspective, I'm probably like 95% all in. I think, I put out a couple tweets earlier in the year about having a plan for this bull run. And a lot of my plan was like, I don't want more than 5% of my liquid portfolio in meme coins because like I'm not good at them. And if you fast forward like 3 months after I put that tweet out, I'm still probably not much higher than like 10% of my liquid portfolio in meme coins after a couple big wins. I'm still pretty much like trying to not, drink all the Kool-Aid and go all in on this stuff. But I think when you're looking at meme coins, they remind me a lot of NFTs in 2021, where it's like this, I can turn 0.05 ETH into 1+ ETH in this casino type vibe. And I think a lot of the class of 2021 NFT people who stuck around are kind of just following the herd because they're trying to make that lotto type win. And Solana is kind of the first time where you can onboard somebody with $100 and let them actually gamble without losing so much of their fees or so much of their capital to fees. So like I'm super bearish on ETH L1 meme coins. I'm only buying Solana meme coins and L2 memes because I think the marginal buyer being able to buy with like small chunks is such an important part of why this works. So yeah, I mean, I'm ready to buy some NFTs at some point, but I'm waiting for the hot ball of money to rotate. Like I was early to Ordinals in late December, early January. I'm holding some of those still, but I'm just right now focusing on where the hot ball of money is, which is the meme coins.
Tyler, do you have any data on this?
Yeah, so like preparing for this, I was just thinking like how big is the order of magnitude difference on just basic trading volume? And just looking yesterday, so Ethereum did $2.5 billion in on-chain coin trading volume yesterday. Sol did $1.7 billion in on-chain trading volume for coins. And NFTs, it's like $25 million and $8 million. So we're talking about 100x to 200x the size of just pure dollars flowing through tokens and meme coins versus NFTs right now. And it's too big to ignore. For anyone who is here just trying to focus on NFTs, I think they have to understand like what is happening right now. I think very much Jeeb said this, NFTs are an attention game. They're also a FOMO game, and there is no FOMO right now in the NFT market, sadly. The FOMO is all in the meme coin streets and everyone chasing those crazy 10x, 20x returns like we did in the last cycle. It feels like there is a scenario where meme coins are the NFTs of this cycle. And they do command lion's share of attention for a while. But I am aligned with Deez where I do think there will be a point where it rotates back. And this is, in my thesis, is because of the digital flex aspect of this. Like it's gauche. It's not cool to flex your coin bag and say like, oh, I have 800,000 WIF. Like that's not as cool of a thing to do as just rep, a CryptoPunk as your PFP. Or a Mad Lads, or perhaps the best Bitcoin NFT in the Ordinals ecosystem that's starting to come alive. So I don't think that idea or concept is going away, but the can might be kicked down the curb a little bit.
Yeah. How do you guys think about meme coins in light of this this NFT money flow? So Batsu posted this this kind of, what is it, Maslow's hierarchy of NFTs, basically, where for anyone watching on YouTube, you can actually see this chart. So it's collectibles at the top, punks, apes, etc. Then there's the generative art, and then at the very bottom it's one of one. How do you think about meme coins in light of this whole NFT money flow chart?
I think meme coins would be at the top with collectibles, or maybe a layer even above collectibles. I think they are the lowest barrier to entry and the least amount of like brain power needed to ape into.
Yeah. I feel like one thing that's missing here too would be like the attention. Like you see, like there's money on the left side, put attention on the other side with attention arrow going upward. And like you said, meme coins would fit right there up top. And it's just from an attention standpoint, it feels like you can hop on Twitter, get in a Telegram. It feels like, honestly, like old NFT days when you'd pop in the Discord and be like, what's the vibe here? Like, what's going on? How can I check the memes? Like, what are people posting about this? And that energy, it feels like, is a snowball effect continually.
It really is. I think my only concern is I agree, like the meme coins are at the top of this pyramid. But I feel like what's not on here is like the crypto majors. And I do think there's a huge cohort of folks who are trading meme coins to accumulate more Solana, more Ethereum, and more Bitcoin that may not flow into one-of-one art or generative art or even PFPs. So I think that's another aspect of this to try to consider. It is going to be interesting to see how the Venn diagram of these coin traders and NFT holders perhaps starts to overlap more in the near future.
It's a good point. Like what's next potentially? And like, how does this flow? Because meme coins typically are like end of cycle type activity, right? And so we're sort of seeing it in like what I'm considering to be the beginning of like a much larger run happen. And so the question becomes like, where do all these wins flow into? Like, it's clear that there's just millionaires sprouting up on a daily basis or people posting ridiculous P&Ls on a daily basis. So you have to wonder like, where's the next bit of alpha going to go to? Or I mean, is there a world too then where it just stays within meme coins? Like this just continues to go on for a long period of time?
What's your take on that, Jeebs? Because it does, right? There's this idea, I feel like, from the last cycle where, okay, you buy the spot, you buy some Solana, then you rotate it into maybe the apps or whatever. Or excuse me, you buy some like Bitcoin and ETH go up. Bitcoin and ETH go up, the majors go up, then it kind of rotates into like the alt L1s or whatever. And then it kind of rotates into, I don't know, the NFTs, and then it rotates it, or the apps, or whatever you want to call it. And then it rotates into meme coins. And you're basically, and that's what we saw last cycle, which is these kind of four stages of rotations. And you're, each time you do that, you're pushing further and further out on the risk spectrum. And I think that's what a lot of folks expected to happen here. And we've skipped all the way to the last step, right? We went straight from Bitcoin and ETH and Solana going up to meme coins going up. So I'd be curious, maybe Deez, I could throw this one to you, like how you think about skipping those, you know, stages 2 and 3 and going straight to meme coins here. And like, how long is this just like, this is how the cycle is going to look? Or yeah, how do you think about this?
Yeah, it's tough. I think over the last year with the Pepe launch and the hype that we got from that late April, early May 2023 meme coin cycle, it really started to shift how I view meme coins. And it made me think a little bit differently about just ignoring them completely till the end of the cycle. Like, I think we have this culture of we want to get rich quick that isn't going anywhere. And I've seen a couple good articles on financial nihilism lately that I tend to find myself agreeing with. And it just, you need exposure to this stuff. I don't know when it'll die down and when it'll pick back up, but I do think it is now like its own section of crypto that you need exposure to, even if it's only 1 or 2 or 3 or 5% of your portfolio, because the attention this gets and the gains that you can have are just like, there's nothing else like it in crypto unless you're able to like be on the seed deals of some of the biggest upcoming L1s or L2s before everyone else can.
Jeebs, from the fund perspective, right, you guys have decisions to make around allocations. Like, how do you think about this whole thesis that, again, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see this. It's like phase one, Bitcoin, phase two, Ethereum, maybe I'd add Solana there, phase three, kind of large caps, and phase four, alt season. How do you think about this from, you know, kind of the allocator seat?
Yeah, I mean, this is the traditional model, right, that a lot of people abide by when it comes to the general flows of things. I personally believe in, like, this is going to be how this cycle pans out. And we're still just heavily in that first phase at this point in time. But at the same time, as people are just, you know, effectively printing more money, they want to go to find a place that's casino-like or has, you know, high beta. And that's why I think someplace in here now, like, you kind of need to add meme coins. And it's unclear where exactly it goes in this process. Right now, it looks like it's someplace in that phase one, phase two.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's happening, here's my take on this, is there are so many people who thought that the market would go this way, right? There are so this is the first cycle where there's been a lot of, like, crypto rich, I would say. So, you know, if you go from the first, I don't know, cycle number three to cycle four or whatever, like from the 2017 cycle to 2020 and 2021, like, there wasn't that many people going into 2021 who had a massive amount of capital. Now there are, you know, millions of people who have a lot of crypto. And there are so many people who kind of understand the chart as it exists like this. So basically what happened is, you know, for you and for me and Tyler and Deez and everyone on this call, I feel like we basically said, all right, if eventually we're all rotating into alt season, why not rotate into alt season to just begin with? Why go through this? Why not front run the narrative if it's going to look like this? Tyler, I'd be curious to get your thoughts on all this.
Yeah, it's almost like the alts and meme coins are on their own vertical here, and they have their own tiers. Like, you have your new majors, right? Like, you have, like, the existing majors like Doge and SHIB, you know, which both got into the top 10 recently, and then now, like, Pepe and Wyth and Bonk emerging across ETH and Solana, and now they're in the top 60, top 70 crypto tokens by market cap, and they're starting to really creep up. Like, what we're seeing is Pepe has its leg up, or Bonk has its leg up. Like, that's the major meme coin mover. And then we're starting to see it trickle down. Like, okay, then the next tier starts to run. And then it goes down to, like, the micro caps and the nano caps. Similar to how, like, the NFT, like, weekend cycles played out in 2021. Like, that summer, like, Fidenzas would run on Thursday, Friday, and Ringers. And then it would go down to, like, the next tier of generative art. And, like, they would run on Saturday, and then Sunday it would be, like, the lowest tier, and then everyone would reset, and it would happen again. It's almost like we're kind of speed running through these cycles, and it is, you know, interesting to watch. And, of course, it's interesting to think about from you know, everyone has an opportunity cost decision and an investment decision to make. Or do you want to play where this hot ball money is, or do you want to play in NFTs? And there's also, like, there's such differences between the three primary NFT ecosystems right now, with Solana, Ethereum, and Bitcoin. And Ethereum feels, like, so established, and especially the PFP aspect of it. Like, a lot of those have had their initial trajectories, and it's harder for a new entrant to try to come in and buy a Bored Ape that's already had the run from 1 to 150 and now all the way back down. Over on Solana, you've got, like, a half dozen interesting projects, but it feels like it's still somewhat in its infancy with respect to really interesting projects. And then now you've got this, what I'll call still a pretty brand new NFT ecosystem in Ordinals on Bitcoin. And that feels like, to me, where perhaps the most opportunity will be in this cycle. And it's not being, there is no farmer overhang with, you know, marketplace incentives just yet, like we're seeing with Blur on ETH, or like we're seeing with Tensor and now Magic Eden on Solana, which has certainly impacted those ecosystems and how the assets are traded. It's a little bit cleaner right now on Bitcoin, but also, if folks remember that 2021 cycle on ETH, it was great for January and February, and then it was very slow March, April, May, and crypto had its time in the sun. And it feels like we might see a very similar scenario play out right now, where it is crypto meme coins, you know, time to run for the foreseeable next few months. And then perhaps one or all of these ecosystems from an NFT perspective will start to see their demand. But I'm not sure it's going to be really even across all three.
Yeah. Deez, maybe you could share a bit about your story almost as it relates to and how you're thinking, because you've run up twice, right? You went all in crypto 2017, made a bit, lost it all by the end of 2018, I think is how I understand the story, right? Pandemic hits, start buying a bunch of kind of altcoins and NFTs and things like that, make a whole bunch of money, lose a decent chunk of it, as I understand it. Maybe, and then, you know, now you're on kind of cycle three here. Like, how do those, how does that experience inform, like, when are you actually going to sell these meme coins? Like, when do you sell these NFTs? Would love to hear that.
Yeah, I grew up loving roller coasters. I went to Cedar Point every summer, and I'm very good at holding things all the way up and then all the way back down. this time, I'm sure I will take a little bit more profit than I did last time, but it's tough. You need a delusional mentality to hold through some of these multiples. Like, it's, I mean, I'll just use Boehm as an example. I woke up yesterday. I saw the 10 SOL I put into the pre-sale is worth 30 grand. And I'm like, oh, I immediately need to sell half of this. And like, that's like my scarred bear PTSD. Like, hey, dude, you just turned 10 SOL into 30 grand. Like, take some money off the table. And you almost need this delusional optimism to be able to hold this thing another like 10 plus X from there. And with that delusional optimism comes the poor selling timing, because like, if you're just delusionally optimistic and you think all your things can go to heaven, eventually you'll hold them from heaven back down to hell. So I try to have a plan of just like, when I feel in my gut that I'm over allocated, I need to sell some. If I'm sending screenshots, I'll trim 10% of the position. Like, I actually did that with Boehm. I tweeted it and was like, wow, this is worth $250,000. And then after that, in the group chat I'm in, I was like, yeah, I think I should actually sell some here, because I normally when I look at it like this, I'm normally upset the next day when I don't sell some. So I'm trying to, you know, I hold a lot of my net worth in Solana and ETH, like just straight, simple staked Solana and ETH, not even supplying it and leveraging it or doing anything crazy. And I think that helps me really ride a lot of these waves without, I mean, I'm obviously a person just like everyone else. And when you turn a little bit into a lot, you want to take some off the table, but I'm really good at just trusting the plan, trusting the process, and you know, seeing what the fuck happens. Like, it happened with Punks and Squiggles and a few other things I've been early to. And I think a lot of the times when you buy things without the primary reason being like a high ROI, you'll actually make more money than when you're just looking for things that are a high ROI. It's kind of this paradox of like, you don't want to try too hard to make as much money as possible, because you actually won't make as much money possible that way.
Yeah. I want to move us away from meme coins and maybe into like future of NFT world. Would love to get your guys' take on this. Jeebs, you sent over the NFT price floor website with the different categories, right? You've got PFPs and avatars, historical NFTs, art, gaming, utility NFTs, and metaverse. What is your like idea on how NFTs end up playing out in this cycle? And I'll go around. I want to do the rounds like Tyler and Deez. I'd love to get your take on just like how this NFT market will play out this cycle, and how it looks the same as the last one, if maybe just bigger, and then how it looks different.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the one that keeps getting talked about the most, and I think has like a high level of probability of success in the long run, is probably going to be around gaming. And it's one of the ones that we just haven't seen a ton of traction move around to. I mean, Parallels had some great news over the past day, but that's one of those areas where 2024 seems to be the year. And that's kind of the narrative around like, will things spin up here? What games are going to get traction? What games are going to reach, you know, 1 million, 2 million, 10 million users at some point? And it does feel inevitable. So that's one that I'm watching the most, just from like a high beta standpoint. For the other categories, I feel like naturally, you know, the NFT market's going to start coming back once the Punk spot is like nonstop, just selling Punks. Like, Punks are continually going. That's probably going to be one of my first like initial signals. And like Tyler mentioned, I'm going to be looking at Ordinals. Like, I'm looking at, you know, some projects over in that ecosystem, especially ones that are within sort of that historical art-based category. And I want to see how those perform initially over time. I think once you start seeing traction there, it just becomes a magnet within those ecosystems. I think there's some areas that, you know, have been struggling, like the art category, the gen art category, the one-of-one art category. They've just had, you know, some tough periods of time here recently. So, you know, from the artist standpoint, I think that's another area that as the whole ecosystem rises, you naturally start to see money flow into those specific areas. And then like I said, that'll roll into art, that'll roll into PFPs, that rolls into collectibles. The whole PFP side of the house, I think we've seen it evolve over the past year. We've seen it go from more or less like a vibes-based approach to something more like a brand. And you're seeing folks like Luca build out actual brands within these specific NFT ecosystems. So this cycle, it'll be interesting to see if sort of the Lindy PFP comes back, the sort of no promises, it is what it is, this is the group that you're sort of belonging to, or if you end up seeing really more of the, you know, there's a sort of single individual entrepreneur, they're running a brand, they have marketing initiatives, they have products, they're holding events, they're garnering attention within the space. There's also room for an entirely new narrative to spin up. I think as we've seen in the NFT space, it's kind of like watching a kid soccer game, right? Like one kid kicks the ball, everyone runs to the ball. Like one kid kicks the ball, right? Everyone runs to it. And I think that's similar in meme coin space and then NFT space. It's kind of like the general crypto NFT attention space, right? Like it's all about attention. And as the whole group runs to it, they kind of leave whatever kids were left, you know, in the last spot.
Jeeves, maybe one thing I'll jump in on. I've got a few thoughts. So, you know, we mentioned, like you mentioned in gaming, like this is kind of the year where like it needs to happen and we need to start seeing some results. I feel the same way with some of the utility or the PFP projects, which are really trying to, you know, expand the brand via top of funnel. And I'm not saying like in 3 or 6 months, but, you know, the argument for Pudgy Penguins, right, is that Pudgy Toys are kind of top of funnel. It's going to bring more eyes into the ecosystem. At some point, they convert to users. I think, of course, the other aspect is another ongoing revenue stream where you don't have to extract money from the collector base, which I think that is super important. But also, like, if we get to the end of 2025, the end of a 2-year cycle here, and if we're not really seeing much conversion on that, then like, did the idea work? I mean, it's still like the revenue can't be discounted. But I think that whole concept is certainly going to come under a little bit more scrutiny, perhaps, in the next couple of years. And then, of course, we've got Gary Vee, some of the other big news that kind of got buried this week in all of meme corn mania. But he's teamed up with the Cocomelon, the team behind Cocomelon, to launch a V-Series children's show. And that's about the biggest partnership you can land. But then it had zero impact on the price of V-Friends, which I thought was very interesting, because back in 2021, of course, if Gary Vee just showed up, if he just got in a project's Discord, that was enough to pump a project 2x. So it kind of shows where things have gone. So I think we're coming to a head a bit in that area. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out for sure.
Yeah, I think one of like the counter indicators for me recently was when that Alien sold. And we really didn't see a ton of punk traction, punk movement. You know, if that would have happened, to your point, like there were certain activities that would happen in 2021, 2022 that would just cause absolutely parabolic effects, like Gary Vee popping in or someone coming in. You know, he kind of started a number of different movements, including like the Purple Hat movement within punks and gaining a lot of traction within that group.
Do you think it's a mistake for some of these NFT collections to actually try to like bring utility?
Absolutely. I think for most of them, it's a mistake. I think a lot of the founders don't know what they're getting into and they're just trying to make the price go up, and they make a whole bunch of promises they can't keep with ideas that are half baked or quarter baked, and they just get lambasted for it. I'm personally not buying any NFT project for the utility. It's just, I hold a couple that I've held for a while, like to say like Forgotten Runes and Pandas and Pudgies and that, but I'm not speculating on NFTs for future utility because I feel like that is the easiest way to get burnt as a speculator. I think 90% plus of the project founders of NFTs are just completely foolish. They had no idea what they were doing. They got into NFTs in 2021, 2022 to make some money because they saw everyone else doing it, and now they're stuck with this community of 10,000 or more. Some of these have 30,000 plus NFTs in them with holders they need to make happy. And I don't want any part of that.
Yeah. I mean, we saw what happened with Kevin Rose, right? Seems like he's walking away from Moonbirds. What do you guys think of that?
Not surprising. As somebody who traded Moonbirds very early on and did well, and then Bag held one all the way down to the end. I am not surprised in the slightest. I think there was never really that grand of a vision. It was just much more of a, hey, this is a really opportunistic thing to do at this period in time. And we already have some success with the art side of things from what we were doing before. So yeah, like, let's get, you know, I'm Kevin Rose. I got a 8-figure NFT collection. This is going to go great. And yeah, now we are where we are.
No, you nailed it. What's so funny about how, like, more, I think more information is starting to come out now. It's just making it a little bit, the picture's becoming more clear. And these, I round tripped 5 Moonbirds, held them all the way up to the 40 ETH floor, $100,000, and didn't sell for a long, long time. So still a little painful. But like Project High Rise was this big vision. Like at one point, that was like the whole vision, a core part of the utility of the Proof and Moonbirds ecosystem. And now it's kind of coming out that that wasn't even a real project. Like they had an artist do a couple renderings, and there was never even like a real tech team working on it. It wasn't even like being seriously worked on with resources behind the scenes. And I think it just goes to show that he never really was as serious about it as perhaps we thought or were led to believe. And I think you could, if you really read the tea leaves, I think you could have picked it up. But I think a lot of us just had the hopium that no, there's got to be something more going on to this. And the reality was, just, there wasn't.
I was in the same boat.
Ryan Carson was the only signal you needed. if you remember early Moonbirds and Ryan Carson, it was very clear. It's like, did they even?
I'm actually surprised that you guys kind of like fell into this Moonbirds trap, and not to say as like, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking, but like it does feel like there's a stark difference between what I would call the crypto native NFTs and the NFTs that are built by outsiders. And I don't know, like when I'm looking at I mean, I'm probably talking my own book here, but like the NFTs that I own, right? It's like Mad Lads, Tensorians, like Pudgies, Bad Kids. Like the reason I like these so much is like people who are actually deeply crypto native own these. And like there's a lot of respect, I would say, for them. And then there's a whole nother bucket where it's like Bored Apes, Moonbirds, Azukis. Like, oh, I don't want to bad talk, you know, a bunch of NFT collections, but like, where it's kind of a bunch of outsiders who came in like 2022, and then they're just like, you know, hosting crazy parties in Miami, but none of them are actually like real crypto people. What do you guys think about that dichotomy?
I think for Moonbirds, yeah, the trade was that you're going to exit on 30 to 50 year old white dudes with too much money for their own good. Like the trade was, hey, this just minted for 2 ETH. They're trading for 8 to 10 ETH. I think these idiots are going to run it up. Let's get on the ground floor and dump on them hopefully soon. And it kind of worked because they went to 40 ETH. But then we had this era of like, well, maybe Kevin does know what he's doing. So that's why I held one, because it was like, okay, if he knows what he's doing, I've booked $100,000+ in profits, whatever. I'll hold this one and free roll it.
Yeah, it's a shame, honestly. Like the whole project, there was, I think, I want to say that's like top 10 most hyped up NFT projects of all time. And it was, there's just so much attention on it at that point. You know, when we go back to, it's all about attention. Everyone was focused on the Moonbirds launch.
It did a lot.
Parabolic run up.
Other hyped garbage too. I mean, we had Mechaverse. We had
Mechaverse. Hape, yeah.
Hape Prime. We had Invisible Friends. Like we had multiple pre-reveal NFTs from outsiders that most of which I had never heard of trading at 10 ETH. It was just a really stupid time.
Yeah. But the goal has never changed, I think, for the traders, which is I'm going to buy here and I'm going to sell this for 10X. And that's just kind of how it's going to work. And honestly, I knew a lot of people buying Moonbirds at that time. And that was the plan. It was like, we're going to get on ground floor. And honestly, they ran up. I think most people at one point in time were in like heavy profits. When they came down, it was like, it was pretty violent, I think.
They were up to 40 ETH floor at one point. Like it was a $100,000 PFP.
It's crazy. Tyler, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. So a couple of thoughts. It wasn't even like a 40 ETH floor. Like it was a liquid 40 ETH floor. Like the sales bot was 36, 36, 38. Like we had never really seen at that point in time that kind of liquidity. And it's just like one of the lessons was like, it comes back to the core point, you know, that was a 2.5 ETH mint, right? It was very expensive. It was a huge raise. People will pay it if they think there is a return on the table. It's the same core concept with Ethereum gas fees. ETH gas fees are very expensive. People will pay it if they think that the trade they're entering is going to offer enough ROI to offset that. Now, I think the other aspect of this is I'm hoping we are a little bit more wary of nine-figure NFT raises for teams that aren't established or haven't built that trust up yet. I mean, we're actually seeing a huge raise today with OMB and their Orange Eyes expansion. And of course, ZK Shark has been in the space for a bit now, but it's starting to happen on Bitcoin. And I think when we're starting to see more and more 10-figure raises, that might be a point in time to say, like, yeah, okay, where are we at in the cycle?
Yeah. All right. So enough talk about Moonbirds. Tyler, how do you think about just allocation to NFTs right now? And, you know, this kind of pyramid of NFTs that we talked about before, there's kind of these one-of-ones, there's the PFPs, and there's this kind of gen art. I don't know if those are kind of the three categories that you think about, but yeah, I'd just be curious how you think about like allocating and how you think about investing right now in NFTs.
They are, and I'm much more of a momentum trader. So I like to trade on attention. And the reality is there is no attention on art right now. I think one of my bigger surprises, I think there was an idea that perhaps PFPs would go away after this last cycle, that, you know, there's only 20,000 of us left. We have hundreds of thousands of PFPs we don't need anymore. I think what we're seeing is that the communities that rally around a 10,000 supply PFP project, is a very important aspect, that you don't get in other types of NFT collections. And it's a reason why they succeed, is because you've got this built-in marketing arm and folks consistently on the timeline talking about projects. So for me, like, where I've been mostly focused is PFP collections on Bitcoin. I think that's the most interesting ecosystem from an investment standpoint to be taking a look at right now. Of course, January and February were very hot. My initial thoughts were that the runes coming in April was going to be a boom for the Bitcoin NFTs, and I wanted to front run that. I'm now starting to think I'm reconsidering that position based on what we're seeing with meme coins on Solana, and are we going to have a liquidity rotation into fungible tokens on Bitcoin, and is that going to cause a temporary bear market in the Bitcoin NFT ecosystem? So I'm very actively kind of thinking through that investment strategy here, of course, across the next few months. But with that being said, I think PFPs will be the early winner. You know, we've seen it with Node Monkeys, we've seen it with OMB, Bitcoin Puppets, one of Deez's favorites. There will be an art cycle on Bitcoin as well. I'm 100% sure of it. I think it will come later. I honestly think there are so many similarities to the 2021 ETH NFT cycle setup to what's happening in Bitcoin on 2024. I think it very well could play out. And that means perhaps an art run later this summer. So I will be positioning for that. And I've been starting to look at some art collections already and accumulating some. For me, more on the generative side. So middle of the pyramid, have not gone down to like the one-of-one side yet. We'll see what that portion of the market really looks like. But that's how I'm starting to think about it, position.
Jeeves, what do you think?
No, I think Tyler's spot on, right? Like with the whole Bitcoin, like, transition narrative, like there's clear that there's interest there. It's clear that there's demand for ordinals. And so like the natural rotation into runes, right? There was an entire BRC20 movement. Folks, you know, speculated there. They then speculated on ordinals. Runes naturally seems to be the next category. So the question becomes, are people going to migrate from their Solana wins over into this ecosystem? Because there's, you know, there's higher upside. Maybe there's more fair launches. Maybe it feels like a little bit more distributed. Or do they kind of remain within that Solana ecosystem? You know, yesterday I was talking to a team. They're building DeFi within the Doge ecosystem. So like, you know, DOG20s, Dogenals are an entirely new category of NFT that are spinning up on like the Doge ecosystem as well. So I think as you start to see like these UTXO-based liquid tokens and then NFTs sprout up more, there's just more ecosystems, I think, that people are naturally going to want to like build this technology within. But the Bitcoin ecosystem does feel like there's at least some momentum gaining there, like the snowball's brewing and runes might be that catalyst of like, okay, I'm going to kick the snowball down the hill now.
Yeah. Let's say I am not a trader. So Deez, it's interesting talking to you. And I guess, Tyler, you like both you guys are very actively trading. let's say I'm not a trader. Let's say I've just got, let's say I've got, I don't know, a bunch of ETH or a bunch of SOL. I don't know. Let's call it 100K or something. And I just want to buy and sit on some NFTs for this cycle. Could be art, could be one-on-ones, could be PFPs. Walk me through how you guys, I guess I'd throw this question to all you guys because I want to hear this. Like, how, what is your investment thesis here? If you're just buying NFTs.
I mean, I think you have to be honest with yourself with what you're buying and tell yourself, am I buying something to support artists or people I love, or am I buying something for more of a, you know, monetary gain, even though I just want to buy it and hold it? I think most people probably are trying to make a monetary gain. They're not in the first camp. For me right now, I would look at the blue chips on Ordinals, which to me are like Node Monkeys, Puppets, Quantum Cat. I don't really understand the Maxi Biz as much, but I think you could throw them in there as well. That might be a little upper on the price, but I think those are some of the safer bets. I think the Ordinal ecosystem has less competition and it's more nascent. And I think these winners are going to, I think these winners are more likely to accrue value than some of the bigger names on ETH, for example. So I guess on the flip side, I would say if you want to support artists, get into collecting one-on-one art, there is a super vibrant ecosystem with a bunch of artists that you can very easily connect with through Twitter mentions or DMs or whatever way you like to talk to them, whether it's going into a Telegram or Discord or whatever. But I think some of those pieces might have the biggest upside. It's just the most risky thing to invest in. You know, the people who bought X Copy's work for $200 and then sold it for millions of dollars the next cycle, they weren't buying that artwork because they wanted to make millions of dollars. Like, they were buying that because they saw something in the artist at that time. I think right now for me, one of the more interesting corners of the art market is the AI art market. As we constantly see AI tech get better and better, we're able to see the progression of that field just grow right before our eyes. And I think some stuff that might be looked at as historical that isn't currently looked at as historical is like a decent bet. I don't want to shill any of my AI art bags. I'll just name the most obvious one, which is Botto, or to me, it's the most obvious one, which is Botto. I bought a Botto 101 last month with some profits I had from meme coins because to me, it is kind of the most unique AI entity. It's not really a person per se. It is more of a DAO or a AI art, you know, ecosystem in which the holders vote on the outputs and everything. But I think there's a lot of breadth that you could dive into, and you really have to, you know, figure out what type of collector or investor you are. If you're someone who just wants to buy a blue chip in, you know, the most Lindy ecosystem that has the most wealth in the space, like maybe look at some Ordinals. If you're somebody who really wants to connect with an artist or the art community on a deeper level, this is like the best time to be buying art because no one cares. And there will be a point in time, I think, where people do care about art again. I think back of the 2021 cycle, we had the Yeah Yeah threads really cementing this overall kind of crypto art theme that really took off and sent X Copy, Hackatal, Coldy, and a bunch of the quote unquote super rare OGs to new heights. I think that'll happen again at the end of the cycle when people are like, collect some culture to show off that, you know, I'm a savvy person who just isn't here to make as much money as possible.
Tyler, what do you think?
D's make some really good points. And I'm very aligned with like the concept of betting on winners in bull markets. And in the art market, it's for me, of course, you've got the top names, right? You've got X Copy, you've got Fidenza. If you've got that kind of a bankroll, the other aspects of the art market to be, you know, very conscious of is dilution and how much art has been created across the last 3 years because of this renaissance that happened in 2020 and 2021. Where I'm going with that is provenance is another factor to really start considering, right, when making any investment decisions. So like when Deez is talking about AI art, some of the very earliest AI art NFT collections and one-of-ones are a way to approach investing in that sector. I think for generative art, it's the same, right? Like Squiggles is the clear like provenance index play on generative art. And I don't think those plays are ever going to go away. Of course, you know, we've seen downturns and whatnot, but that's how I'm thinking about that sector. And it's similar approaching the NFT market as well. Like, I'm very aligned with these. I think ordinals are the play, and it's betting on winners. Like, I'm not in the camp of, you know, trying to find the undiscovered gem, because it is quite the opposite of the Ethereum and Solana NFT ecosystems. There is no dilution right now. There's really only 5 or 6 projects, you know, that have any meaningful foundation and communities behind them. So you can effectively pick, and you can kind of do your research and find out which ones have more provenance than others. And I think that's going to be a core driving factor in the market action that we see this year. On Ethereum, it's much trickier. And in a more established market, I think one of Deez's rules is he doesn't like to overpay, you know, more than like 5-10 ETH for PFPs, and it's going more downstream. It makes it tougher to buy some of the top end ones. I think, you know, one collection I'm actually okay to name drop, I don't own a ton of assets in this ecosystem, is I think Memeland is a very interesting one with what they just rolled out with Stakeland, and effectively turning holders and meme coin holders into miniature VCs, like in having this project launch pad that they're going to launch with Stakeland and provide that access to holders as a potential flywheel. So I think that's an interesting one. That's an area where I would pay attention to, because it unlocks more than just NFT investment. It unlocks different aspects of crypto that you might be able to get exposure to. Depending like where you're at in the market, like, you may not have access to those type of deals. Like, these are tokens that are going to launch on Binance, market made with some of NineGag's, you know, colleagues and friends. So you know that they will have some firepower behind them. So that's how I'm thinking about it.
Jeebs, are you buying any of the kind of classic NFTs right now, that I'd call them, the ones that are popular on crypto Twitter?
I don't have a ton to add there on that one, other than, like, step one is just knowing what your risk tolerance is, because each of these different categories comes with, I think, different risk tolerances. ETH is the clear, I think, winner when it comes to, like, holding a majority of the sort of NFT PFP value at a high level. But when it comes down to it, like, there's, you even have to think, like, deeper than that. So we're in this massive experimentation phase where you're seeing stuff like Pudgies, stuff like Pandas, some of these other projects, Memeland, you know, for example, that are gaining traction by building out the brand, trying to figure out, like, what does having an NFT brand and larger community where you're actually building some type of IP, some type of user rights, some type of a company around all this, some type of a true ecosystem around sort of this collective belief in the larger project. And I think we continue to see experimentation. You know, we've seen a bunch of Fortune 500 companies come in, make attempts at experimenting. I would say not many successes there so far, but there's still opportunities for them to come in and figure out how can they actually provide these scarce digital objects to their fans, to their customers, et cetera, in either, like, meaningful ways, where I think you see some wanting to sell pieces for, like, sort of high value, or in the sort of low value, high volume ways, which is, like, let me provide you a badge or a reward for some type of an activity that you've done, something you've accomplished, something you've purchased, authenticity of a good, et cetera. So, like, on that side of the experimentation side of the house, like, I think there's only a handful of projects. And so if you want to go bet there, I think that they, you know, you can sort of evaluate each one, see which one resonates with you the most. Then there's sort of the other side of it on the PFP front, where it's like no promises, like, maybe you end up in a Turkish bathhouse in New York City at 2 a.m. Like, it's hard to say, right? And so that's going to be, like, you know, your dick butts, your toads, your even sort of like your punks, et cetera, where it's more like community driven around. There's no promises from the project. This is grassroots, but maybe it's kind of Lindy if you own one of these, or if it's your PFP and someone else in that community might recognize it a little bit.
Hey everyone, wanted to give a big shout out to today's sponsor, Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol. If you are like Santi and I and you play around on chain, you know how bad the cross-chain experience is today. Well, Wormhole has set out to solve that, powering cross-chain transfers for over 200 different multi-chain teams, including some of the best like Uniswap and Circle. So what does that mean for you, the Empire listener? This opens up a huge number of multi-chain use cases across DeFi, NFTs, governance, oracles, and more. By supporting over 30 different blockchains and 6 different runtimes, including Sui, Solana, different ETH L2s, use Ethereum and a whole bunch more. That means you have now the most powerful interoperability platform at your fingertips. If you're a developer, you'll be excited to hear that Wormhole provides an extensive suite of tools and infrastructure so that you can securely build multi-chain applications. But don't just take our word for it, obviously. Wormhole Protocol leads the industry in all-time messages transferred with over 900 million cross-chain messages. 900 million, that is close to a billion, and that's a big number of messages. As a thank you, Wormhole Foundation is dropping exclusive NFTs. That's right. We got some exclusive NFTs for Empire listeners. Hit the link in the description to claim your unique Wormhole NFT today. This episode is brought to you by Monad. Monad's thesis is simple. The EVM is here to stay, similar to JavaScript and Web 2, but unfortunately, today's EVM lacks the high performance and the scalability that developers need to make certain applications possible. Monad addresses these concerns and these bottlenecks while preserving seamless EVM composability for application developers. There's a seamless transition to Monad as the Ethereum RPC API allows for really easy portability. And for developers, Monad can support 10,000 real transactions per second with their unique parallel execution environment. And of course, there's full compatibility with EVM bytecode. Monad's internal devnet is live. Public testnet comes out soon. You can join Monad's journey in two ways. One, go follow them. They're on Twitter at Monad, M-O-N-A-D underscore XYZ. And also join the Monad Discord. It's discord.gg/Monad. Big thanks to Monad for sponsoring Empire. This episode is brought to you by Shardium. Shardium is an EVM-based, linearly scalable smart contract platform that provides low gas fees while maintaining security through dynamic state sharding. Shardium's auto-scaling works by automatically adjusting the resources of the system or the application based on predefined rules and metrics. What this means is that when an application on Shardium goes viral, gets big, right, the network reacts by independently adding more active validator nodes from the standby node pool to increase throughput capacity. This does four things. It lowers energy consumption, lowers cost, improves load management, and protects app failures. You can learn more about Shardium or even spin up your node at shm.gg/validator. That's shm.gg/validator. Big thanks to Shardium for sponsoring Empire. This episode is brought to you by Supra, an Oracle provider across over 50 different blockchains. Whether it's critical price levels or liquidation triggers, beat your competition to the punch with Supra. It's as good as having the first mover advantage on every price update. Supra offers fast oracles and DVRF free for 12 months at supra.com/blockworks for a limited time only. So you're going to want to bank on this 12-month free offer as soon as possible. And if you're just listening and you know any builders, you can earn $1,500. That's $1,500 that you can go throw into Bonk or Whiff or whatever meme coin you like by letting them know about this deal. They can get fast oracles today free for 12 months and you get $1,500 for the referral. You can visit supra.com/blockworks to learn more. Go check them out. Tell them Santi sent you. Tell them Jason sent you. We got you back. Thanks, Supra, for sponsoring. Tyler, you have any more thoughts on Doge? I know Jeeves mentioned Doge at the beginning.
Yes, I really wanted. I hoped we could come back to yeah. that. So there's all this chatter in the meme coin supercycle, right? And it feels cliche, but there's a scenario where it plays out. Doge is king. We've got investors like Ru Kang, you know, talking about on Twitter like becoming like building a micro strategy like company to just continuously acquire Doge as a bet on this. In the scenario where that plays out, it's not that far-fetched to think that there could be an ordinals like ecosystem built on Doge, like Dogenals, I think is the term. There's some that already exist, right? Doge Rocks. I actually have a few friends who own Doge Rocks. It's exactly the same concept as Bitcoin Rocks, Ethereum Rocks. It's not that far-fetched to feel like there could be like a small NFT ecosystem happening on Doge. And is that going to be one of the surprise trends, you know, that comes out of this eco? Jeeves, I'm curious if you know any more about kind of what's happening or what's being built.
I'm going to hop off mute. Check this out. So this is Doggy Market. So I actually went and bought my first Dogenal last night. You can see here, like, there's So there's a handful of these collections, right? So Dojinal Mini Dogs, Dojinal Dogs. I think Dojinal Dogs, right, they're the ones with the highest value, but these are going for like nearly $3,000, you know, 1,800 Doge or so. And so I realized last night, like after talking to this team that's building in the Doge ecosystem, I was like, all right, I need to like go get my feet wet. Of course, Dogecoin Punks, the natural first project that makes its way over to Graffiti, you know, another blockchain here. But I realized I had to get my feet wet with this. So I started like diving into it a bit. Tyler, I'm totally aligned with you. You know, we were talking about this yesterday a bit, but like at some point, Doge, I think, spikes this cycle. And there's a lot of sort of fringe niche ways in which it can happen at this point in time. But like, I think there's reasons for people are betting on this ecosystem. It sort of is like the mecca of memes. And, you know, even when you go and look, I was looking at top meme coins yesterday just to see like, where does Pepe, where does Whiff, all these different tokens, you know, line up with them. Like, how big do you think, I just say, what percentage of Doge do you think, you know, Pepe is? Take a wild guess.
It's like 15 to 20%.
Even less than that. It's crazy. It's like, it's probably like close to 10%. Here, let me share my screen quick. And so like, it's insane how much Doge and SHIB have advantages over these other meme coins at this point in time. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see some of these eventually move up a bit. The one thing I'll say here too is like Doge, if you start to look at a bunch of these, Doge is really the only one too that supports its own layer one. So in my eyes, it's kind of like a pure meme coin. It has its own layer. It's starting to get its own infrastructure built on top of it. And so if you can build out, you know, Doge DeFi, Doge NFTs, Doge culture, further than it already exists, like I actually do see a world where that becomes a really interesting ecosystem.
Guys, let's move away from the trading side of things into kind of the market structure of NFTs. So OpenSea obviously was the king of the last cycle. And then we've seen a bunch of upstarts kind of eat into that market share over time, right? Magic Eden ate a lot of the market share. Magic Eden's now dominating on Bitcoin with Ordinals. Tensor obviously dominated on Solana, kind of ate a lot of that market share away from Magic Eden. We saw Blur come onto the scene as this kind of like pro platform. Deez, maybe I'll throw this one to you. Like, what do you think who are you impressed by here? And like, what do you think the kind of market structure for NFTs is going to look like? And maybe, you know, let's call it 12, 24 months.
Yeah, I mean, I guess full disclosure, I'm an angel investor in Blur. That's the platform I probably use the most. I really just go to wherever the liquidity is with the best user experience. Like, I'm pretty much a mercenary when it comes to marketplaces. I don't really, you know, particularly like love Magic Eden, for example, but it's the only place I can go trade ordinals. So I'm fine using it. And on the Solana side, I end up using Tensor over Magic Eden because it reminds me more of Blur. And I like having more of those like charts and data analytics rather than just like bigger pictures. So I'm unsure. I think the marketplace wars could get more interesting. I think we're starting to see a bunch of the retroactive rewards trying to pull people in. We had the Magic Eden, whatever diamonds or whatever the fuck they're called, like rewarding ETH traders back to 2017, which I thought was an interesting thing to try to get, you know, people to use their platform. I'm sure we're going to probably have more of that. We have this Tensor airdrop coming out, I think soon they announced that. And yeah, I mean, for me as a collector, I'm just very thankful that we have so many different options where we get rewarded for using the options. I think as a collector, you want to try every option possible to figure out what's best. You don't really, there's no reason to be loyal or to pledge allegiance to any marketplace. It's really about trying to go where you have the best user experience and pay the lowest amount in fees. So I don't know how that's going to change over the year. I'd like to see OpenSea do something. It just seems like they're going to lay on their back and fucking die, which is impressive, but also sad. Other than that, I'm sure there'll be some other stuff I can't even guess that'll happen as people try to vie for the volume, especially if NFTs come back. Like if we see NFT inflows go back to what they were in 2021, I think you're going to see more marketplaces trying to get a chunk of that volume.
Yeah. What do you guys, do you think that there will be one platform that kind of ends up dominating across a bunch of chains, or will it be like, all right, you know, Magic Eden is like the platform for ordinals. Blur is the platform for ETH. Tensor is the platform for Solana. What do you think that, maybe Jeebs, I'd throw this to you.
Yeah. I mean, like Dee said before, I think it's a very transactional business. Like I'm trying to buy NFTs. I'm trying to sell NFTs. And so incentives drive a majority of human behavior. And so when it comes down to earning points or using a protocol that's going to reward you versus one that's not going to, I think most people are going to opt into the one that is choosing to reward them for using that product, bringing their volume there, et cetera. So I don't have a clear thought on like who the winner is. I know Tyler had some tweets on using like the Magic Eden wallet and how seamless it is, you know, across all the different chains and different protocols and stuff. So I'd be curious, you know, your thoughts on that, Tyler.
The Magic Eden come up here has probably been one of my biggest surprises of 2024. So like in 7-day volume, just to share some numbers right now, Magic Eden is number one by all marketplaces with 39%, 195 million. Blur is number two with 28% market share. OpenSea is in third with 9%. OKX, basically with their stranglehold on the Eastern market, 8%. Tensor's fifth at 7.7%. This was shocking to me when I first found this TXO dashboard and started really diving in to this. So a couple things that have surprised me. So one, Tensor came out and they just started dominating Solana. I think they ran up to about a 70 to 75% market share. They've lost it. They've lost it back to Magic Eden. Magic Eden has now regained market share on Solana. And I think I can objectively say like that Tensor has a better technical marketplace product. It is a better suite to trade NFTs than what Magic Eden is offering. And I think my takeaway there is just tokens and incentives trump everything else. And it's playing out before our eyes. I think it's going to be very interesting to see like when all the incentives are gone, the tokens are all out on the table, like which marketplace is going to win. I think for me, if Blur was cross-chain, they would likely be the winner. I think they've got the best trading experience. It doesn't seem to me that they're trying to do that. So I think we're probably going to be operating in a fragmented world. Magic Eden has a leg up right now in a fragmented ecosystem because of that wallet and being able to bridge and swap currency across the three majors, Sol, ETH, and Bitcoin, all within one wallet and never have to leave their marketplace. That is saving serious steps. And if they're able to kind of work out some of the kinks and get the tech working and fluid, that can be a pretty big edge. So if I had to bet on one of these marketplaces to still be the winner in 3 months, I think I'm still betting on Magic Eden. In 9 months or 12 months, I'm not as sure. I think we will have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I think not to get in any specifics, but just a lot of other marketplaces that aren't Magic Eden are looking at what Magic Eden has done with ordinals and being the first mover. And I don't think that they're all just going to let Magic Eden eat that whole cake for themselves. So I'm definitely expecting more competition in the ordinal space in particular.
For sure. I mean, it feels like they caught magic in a bottle on that one. Just like the perfect timing, the perfect kind of wallet, the perfect narrative upswing. And then that the diamonds program, I mean, that is in some ways, you know, the meme was like, that's the OpenSea airdrop. Like they went back and effectively like vampire attacked all those users. And it'll be interesting to see how they continue to build out that suite. This was not on my bingo card either, Tyler. Like I was incredibly surprised by this one. And it's actually been, you know, it's an incredibly pleasant experience using it. So I'm excited to see where they go with that.
It's good and it's bad. Like that, so like the users will win with more competition, perhaps in the short term. But we've seen how these farming incentives can wreck NFT ecosystems. And I feel like Bitcoin and Ordinals is like so pure right now and so clean. I'm actually quite terrified for what incentives will do and the unintended consequences it might have in that eco. But you know, buckle
if you,
up, I guess.
If you guys were OpenSea, what's the way to save OpenSea? Because yeah, looking at this 1 month volume, you've got Blur, who is, you know, dominating on ETH, Magic Eden, so 60% Bitcoin, 30% Solana, Tensor 100% Solana, OKX Bitcoin, and then OpenSea is down at fifth. What's the way to solve OpenSea if you're OpenSea?
I mean, token, right? Like, other than token, I think the only other option is owning the cross-chain experience somehow. And like, you got to support Bitcoin, Solana, and ETH, and you've got to be able to make the swaps happen behind the scenes, and it's going to have to be the best user experience. I'm not even sure if that is enough, but I think that's the first step.
Yeah, I think it's tough. I think a lot of people expected a token. I think their fees are the highest. Could lower those. They made a stand, and then they backtracked on their stand, and then they made a stand again. I don't know. Maybe take some of the money they raised and give it to holders. Like, I really don't know. I feel like vibrationally, ever since that, I know they didn't raise $13 billion, but I think they raised out of $13 billion valuation. I feel like it's been downhill from there.
I just feel like they're so quiet. I'm like, what do you like? Say something.
Well, they fired half their team. Not.
Yeah, but a lot of people fired half their team quietly. OpenSea. There was just like firing half your team in the bear markets. Honestly, everybody did that. So that's not, I think, the problem. The problem is like, what are you doing? I just haven't heard a single thing from OpenSea. I'm like, say something. Like, who's running that place right now?
The signal that I've gotten, and I think that everyone here is resonating with, is like complacency. This is going to go down potentially as like a classic textbook example in Web3, where like, if you're complacent, people are going to come and hunt and like come eat your lunch. And so you really need to remain competitive. You need to be constantly copy trading. Like, there was that period of time. Do you remember when Blur and OpenSea were kind of going back and forth on royalties? And I mean, they got into that whole battle with that, and Blur ended up really winning out of that competition. And so, you know, now we're seeing Magic Eden come up and bring a little bit more diversity in its chains and holdings, and providing that out to traders. To me, if I'm you know, OpenSea, I'm looking at the competition and going like, what can I be doing to be competing with these other chains? Why are they attracting so much attention? Why are customers coming here, etc.? And you have to be agile and nimble, you know, in the space.
Yeah. Do you guys have any excitement around some of these companies doing? Remember the kind of Pico top? There was, you know, Reddit, Starbucks, Disney. You know, a lot of these folks kind of getting into NFTs. Some of them have actually kind of lasted, right? Disney's doing their Disney Pinnacle, I think it's called, and Starbucks kept doing their thing. But do like these kind of enterprise, you know, digital commerce NFTs make that world better? Like, does that bring you guys any excitement or no?
I can pop in here first. Just talking about Pinnacle and some of these other apps, going back to like when choosing, you know, which direction to go into, that falls heavily into the experimentation phase. And that's specifically like corporate experimentation with NFTs, with collectibles, et cetera. The Disney Pinnacle app is interesting, right? That's run by Dapper and Disney together. Disney fans, right? If you go to a Disney park, a Disney cruise, they have the pin shops where you can go in, you purchase pins, you can trade pins. There's old ones, there's rare ones, there's common ones, et cetera, that attract higher value or maybe lower value. And so they effectively recreated that whole program through Disney Pinnacle, but it's purely digital. So you go through, you can buy what looks like a loot box, and each loot box is themed. So it might be Star Wars Rogue One. It might be Disney villains, et cetera. You purchase it for $7. There's maybe like five different pins and then four tiers of each pin that have associated rarity. And from there, like, it's unclear where this goes to, right? Imagine the next step would be to have a marketplace where people can buy, sell, trade these. I think if you're Bob Iger and Disney, you have to consider, how can you build out experiences with these? Like, if I go to the Disney park and I have these digital assets, what does that open up to me at the parks? And then how can I also trade these with other people? I think there's a really big opportunity for that to become something that adds value to the larger brand and experiences that you have with yourself, your family, et cetera, as opposed to just becoming like digital.
Deez, I'm assuming you don't get too excited about this. Tyler, any excitement around these? Or
I'm in this similar camp. I think initially when these started rolling out, I had like the same kind of pie in the sky, top of the funnel, like this will convert a percentage of users into the broader ecosystem. I don't really know that we've seen that pan out yet. And it's still pretty early. I think where it potentially gets interesting is if some of these projects do kind of tie in the financial aspect. And I think that if that's not really ever plugged in, if any of the Disney collectibles or the OG Starbucks stamps, if they don't have the monetary value, if they don't have a few splashy sales, I don't really know how it converts folks into the NFT trading environment that we know about and have been talking about so far on the show. So I think we're still waiting for it to happen. We saw glimpses with Reddit, right? Like when some of those low serial, some of the rare Reddit avatars started selling, I think that caught a lot of folks' attentions. So I'm not ruling it out. But for me, it's got to be something more like that. We have to see some demand for rare collectibles for it to really start to garner up more attention and chatter.
Yeah. Deez, maybe I'll throw this question to you. How do you think about buying a collection? Like, let's say you find a PFP collection. So I think you were buying Node Monkeys the other day. Like, do you buy, I'd just be curious how you actually buy it. Like, do you sweep the floor? Do you try to find a grail? Do you just do it by a trait that you like and you think is cool?
Yeah, like 2 years ago, I was on a mushroom trip and this quote came to me that is, floors are for flippers and ceilings are for fans. And I think that is the best way to describe how I buy. You know, 95% plus of the time, I'm a flipper. I'm not a fan. And I'm just trying to buy the cheapest of the collection so that I can sell it for the cheapest amount later on. And I don't get caught up in, oh, dude, it has like, you know, it's top 2.5% rarity. I mean, this combo of traits, there's only two of them with the 3D glasses and this hat. Like, that's just a recipe to burn yourself. For Node Monkeys in particular, I have one Node Monkey that's a hoodie Node Monkey that I bought the first night. And I bought that one because I'm like, I'm a fan of this collection. I need a hoodie. I need to show off that, like, I'm not just trying to flip this one. And then every other node I bought was a floor. Very similar with the puppets. I bought one Mog glasses that was a little premium over the floor because I wanted a Mog glasses. But then every other node I bought was just, or I mean, every other puppet I bought was just me on the floor. I think 90%+ of the time, buying the floor is the better move, especially if you're mostly buying for financial reasons. It's just, I've seen it too many times where you can 10x the floor. And if you would have bought the rare, you would be lucky to 5x it. And you could have just bought 10 floors for the price of the rare. And you would have had an easier job executing to get out. And you would have made more money. So I think just most of the time, you have to go with floors. Unless you're a massive fan of the collection, in which that's when you buy the grail.
Cool. Awesome, guys. Anything else you guys wanted to cover?
Yeah, no, I have a question for you as like an NFT founder with permies around Blockworks. How do you approach sort of creating an NFT, cultivating a group, et cetera? Like, and your experiences as being sort of owning an NFT collection that has, you know, associated value, brand value, holder value, et cetera?
Yeah, it's a really so we launched Permies for context for people. So we have this conference that we do with Bankless, and we launched these NFTs called Permies. And instead of this like classic 10,000 PFP collection, we launched 555. And the reason for that is the Permies basically existed to be the VIP ticket for the first ever permissionless, right? If you owned a Permie, it got you a VIP ticket for permissionless and everything that came with that. We did that Permies night, the night before the event. It was amazing. And then it also is a lifetime pass for the conference, right? So if you know that you're going to come to permissionless for a few years, owning a Permie actually will ultimately save you money. Where it was really good and really bad, I would say. Maybe not really bad, but like there were some big learnings from launching that. And I've talked about it on Empire a little bit before, but I don't think the business model, I don't think when you have, especially when you have a 555 collection, and Jeeves, we've talked a little bit about this, like we thought about it as like a way to make money, right? And it's definitely not that, especially with royalties going away. Like, I don't think that these collections are just it's not a big enough line item for Blockworks to be a big revenue generator that we should be paying attention to. Where I do think it's really beneficial is, like this kind of cult following and community that it ends up generating. So we've kind of shifted in the last probably 3 months to think about Permies less of like, hey, this is a you know, something, a revenue generating opportunity for us that's going to make a boatload of money, and more of like, hey, we now have 555 like real true fans of Blockworks. Like these people, like there's a Permies Telegram chat. These people, like, they will review our pro, like they're just diehard Blockworks stans, I would say. They'll come to every event that we do. They'll fly across the country to come to permissionless. They'll review our products before they're live. They give us feedback on podcasts. Like, they are just stans. And so we want to basically, we're actually kind of like figuring out Permies 2.0 right now. And I think, you know, you guys will probably see something around Permies 2.0. And what I want to do is kind of make it this like, yeah, make it this kind of access pass for like permissionless and Empire and different things like that, but not treat it as like, how we were before, which is like, oh, we can use Permies to go make a whole bunch more money. It's more like, hey, we can leverage this community where they can get all these things that Blockworks offers. But what Blockworks can get is like this diehard community. So yeah, I don't know. That's how we're treating it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Glad you're thinking deeply about it.
We are. I don't know. I've been very impressed by, like, I mean, I said the NFTs that I own, but it's like, I've just seen what Mad Lads has done with, I mean, they've built a whole business, right, with Backpack off of Mad Lads. Tensor, I'm not sure Tensor would be in the place they were with that Tensorians. Like, they have a diehard community of these Tensorian holders.
If you look at the Say ecosystem, there's like Webump, who created, I think it was Lighthouse.
Yeah.
It's a kind of similar play, like building that infrastructure within the ecosystem.
Yeah. So I don't know. We're excited.
Right on.
Tyler,
thanks for dealing with my Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to add like the Wicked Cranians anecdote, and like this idea of like cult fandom. It is probably like one of the most core and foundational use cases. Like, there's still a group of Wicked Cranium holders, like this archaic project from 2021 that had a short stint in the sun, basically went to zero, but like they're still like going to concerts. They're still like actively utilizing the utility of that project. It's still a vibrant community, and it's cool to see. And I think that aspect, community building and then, you know, founders benefiting from that, as well as the community finding ways for them to benefit, is going to be a continued use case that we see through this next cycle. So it's cool to see, and excited about Permies.
100%. Cool, guys. Deez, appreciate it. Jeebs, Tyler, appreciate you guys. This is a fun pod.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you so appreciate much it. For having us, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Don't forget to claim your free Wormhole NFT exclusive to Empire listeners. Hit the link in the description of today's episode and fill out the form to claim your unique Wormhole NFT today.